Then we go to the next topic, which is IBOR. Man even said we don't have so many representatives from banks, but we thought it might be interesting because when IBOR is affecting everybody, because maybe also in your companies you have financial instruments which are based on IBOR, and I think there is a kind of information need, what we are doing, what we have done. Welcome, financial instruments team.
Half of the team is here today.
Who will present? Fernando, will you do?
No, it will be Christos and Ira.
Okay. Floor is yours.
Hello. My name is Chris. Today I'm joined by Lira and Fernando. The objective of this session would be to provide you with an overview of the IBOR reform and obtain input on accounting issues that that you might want to consider for phase two of this project. Before I dive into the amendments, I would just like to give you like a bit of background on the IBOR reform. And I think that I could do that by answering three simple questions. The first one would be, what are IBORs? IBORs are interest rate benchmarks that represent the cost of funding in a particular combination of currency and maturity. The index trillions of dollars in derivatives, loans, cash instruments, and even leasing contracts. And the most popular are the LIBORs in different currencies, Ionia and Euribor. In Europe and TIBOR in Japan. What led to the reform? Due to the low volume of interbank transactions after the crisis and due to the market manipulation of LIBOR, there was a fundamental review initiated by the Financial Stability Board, which led to this wide reform known as the IBOR reform. And finally, what are the effects from this reform? There is going to be some uncertainty about the existing benchmarks, and this could lead to some market implications that could affect financial reporting, and that's why the board undertook this project. So on slide two, at the beginning of the project, the board split the project in two phases. Phase one, which addressed the most urgent issues arising even before the reform is enacted, and then phase two of the project, which is actually issues when the existing benchmark is replaced by the new rate. We will focus now on phase one, which are the most urgent because they could trigger trigger discontinuation of hedge accounting. So the board decided to address four hedge accounting requirements. The first one is the highly probable. Second one is the prospective assessments, the retrospective assessment in I-39 only, and the risk component, the separately identifiable risk component. The reason why failure to meet any of these requirements could lead to a discontinuation of hedge accounting and eventually to P&L volatility in two ways, mainly by recording changes in derivatives on P&L and in some situations where the cash flow hedge reserve deferred in OCI needs to be immediately classified into P&L upon discontinuation of hedge accounting. On slide three, I would try to give you like a brief overview of what are the proposals for phase one and why did the board decide to provide relief for the hedge accounting requirements I mentioned before. First, with the highly probable requirements, so forecast transactions are eligible hedged items in cash flow hedges if they meet the highly probable requirement. However, due to the IBOR reform, it might be difficult to say that these could meet the highly probable requirement. And if we take the example of some future interest payments that are linked to IBOR, and we also assume that we are approaching the reform, we're approaching the date of the reform, this could trigger migration from the existing benchmark to the new rate. And there is uncertainty as to whether these cash flows would be linked to IBOR or the new RFR. So the board decided that in this situation, we should assume that the forecast cash flows should be IBOR-based, and they should not be altered as a result of the reform. For the second one, which is the prospective assessments, IFRS 9 requires an economic relationship between the hedging instrument and the hedged item, and under IAS 39, we also have a hedging relationship that needs to be highly effective in achieving offsetting. Both of these are forward-looking requirements, so they are referred to as prospective assessments. When we are making these assessments, we need to compare changes of the hedging of the future cash flows on the hedging instrument and the hedged item. And these assessments could be impacted by uncertainties in timing and the amount and the amount of the designated cash flows, because we don't know what these cash flows are going to be. Are they going to be RFR or IBOR based? And when are these cash flows going to be amended? These uncertainties around the timing and the amount could affect the prospective assessments and could lead to discontinuation of hedge accounting. And the board decided that the entity should continue to perform these assessments and that the benchmark rate will not change and will not be altered as a result of the reform. Finally, we have the separately identifiable risk component. An item can be designated in its entirety, or we can designate a risk component. When we have an eligible hedge item under IFRS 9, and this risk component needs to meet the separately identifiable requirement. It is pretty straightforward when it's contractually specified, but when it's not contractually specified, market liquidity would be necessary to demonstrate that the risk component is separately identifiable. So a significant decrease in market liquidity due to IBOR reform could affect the continuous assessment of whether this risk component is separately identifiable. And the board decided that based on the amendments, an entity would have to prove that a risk component is separately identifiable only at the inception of a hedging relationship. On slide four, we have listed here what was the feedback from the 84 comment letters that we received in the 45 comment letter period, which is quite a high number for this short period of time that respondents had to provide us with comments. The feedback was generally positive and supportive about the board's proposals. We still listened to the feedback that we received in certain areas, as the ones listed in red or amber. Especially, the board decided to provide relief for the IAS 39 retrospective assessment, simplify disclosures, and also provide some clarification for the transition guidance. Now, in the deliberations of phase one, the board decided to remove IAS 39 requirement for retrospective assessment. So, under IAS 39, the actual results of the heads needs to be within the range of 80% to 125%, Now, with the amendments, entities would not need to discontinue hedge accounting if the results fall outside this range, and entities would need to perform the prospective assessment, and which means that all the discipline around the application of hedge accounting of the hedge accounting model will rely on the prospective test. With regards to the scope of the amendments, the board also had to clarify that it did not intend to exclude the scope from the scope of the amendments hedging relationships in which interest rate risk is not the only hedge risk. In terms of macro hedges, the board decided to extend the relief for the specific for the separately identifiable risk component. Macro hedges are when an entity frequently resets a hedging relationship because both the hedging instrument and the hedged item frequently change. And also, the board decided to clarify what happens when an entity ceases to apply the proposed exceptions for a group of hedged items. The board decided that the assessment should be done on an individual basis rather than a group basis. And finally, the board decided to simplify the disclosure requirements. There are already some hedge accounting requirements under IFRS 7. The board proposed that some specifically identified disclosures, there should be information that should be separately, that should be provided separately for hedge account, for hedging relationships that to which the proposed exceptions apply. But we received feedback from constituents and who suggested to simplify the proposed disclosure requirements, and these requirements have been significantly decreased from the proposals in the ED. And now Lyra will continue with phase two.
Yes, thank you, Chris. So as the board was finalizing and publishing the amendments to phase one and by end of September, it also started the discussions around what could be the potential issues for phase two, which is what the next two slides are looking at. So moving on to phase two, which looks at the issues affecting financial reporting after the reform has been enacted. As noted in this slide, the staff engaged with various stakeholders to gain an understanding on what could be the potential replacement issues, and as a result of those activities, it developed a preliminary list of the scope of these activities. And I emphasize that it is a preliminary list because as the reform is developing, there are specific conditions and details that are yet to be known, and hence there could be issues that will need that are not on the list, but we will become aware of as the reform progresses. But nevertheless, these issues are expected to be discussed by the board, and the order in which they are expected to be discussed provide that general direction of where phase two is headed to. In deciding the order in which the issues should be discussed by the board, the staff also considered the inherent interaction and consequential impact those issues could have with one another. For example, if a modification of a financial instrument results in derecognition of that instrument, that has consequential impacts on hedge accounting because it may mean that the hedging relationship that the financial instrument is part of could be discontinued. So starting this month onwards, these issues will be discussed by the board, commencing with the classification and measurement issues. In the context of IBO reform, under classification and measurement, the board will look at issues such as what is considered to represent a modification of a financial instrument, when does a modification result in derecognition, and how to account for the results of each of those assessments, including the consequential effects of recognizing the modified financial asset as a new financial asset and the impact that could have in assessing the business model, SPPI, but also the impact that could have recognizing the new instrument, for example, a financial liability in the accounting for embedded derivatives. So moving to slide 8, the second area that the preliminary scope contains is the discussion around the implications on hedge accounting, including the impact of changes in hedge documentation, implications for macro hedging, and an area that a lot of the respondents to the IBOR export draft highlighted is what happens when the relief provided by phase one ceases to exist. So the kind of the implications that should be considered at that stage, along with the valuation adjustments. So consistent with the feedback from comment letters, the board is aware that IBOR reform may also have some impact in accounting for an in accounting in other IFRSs, for example, Chris mentioned earlier the potential impact that may come in IFRS 16 in leases. And as a result, it plans to discuss those implications under the other IFRS's area. And finally, the board will also assess whether additional disclosures or amendments to the existing disclosures are necessary to accompany the decisions made for the accounting of the replacement issues. So with that, I would like to invite you for your input in discussing whether you are aware of any issues that could be a potential, could have potential implications for phase two, so other than those issues that are listed in the previous two slides.
Okay, thanks. Morelio?
I don't have additional issues beyond the ones that have been already listed here. But I do agree with the ones that have been identified. I think they are relevant. I think they are they have been properly selected. And I would recommend special attention to modification of financial assets, because I think we don't have enough guidance, as we do for financial liabilities. Some people believe that it's for reasons of symmetry, they should apply, they should be applied the same requirements for financial assets, but that's not explicit. So I think it's a circumstance in which these guidances would be really needed.
I think that's on the list, modifications. Will we deal with that then? Sandra.
The only other comment, with this being such a high priority activity, just make sure that you have adequate resources on phase two. It's going to be critical for a lot of companies to make sure it's comprehensively addressed.
Okay, thanks for that.
Maybe it's more a general comment. If there is one area that I personally experience as a form over substance area, it's hedge accounting and measuring form over substance by trying to explain my treasurer what the accounting for the hedges are, and when does my treasurer think of something being a new thing or continuation of an existing, and what the accounting standards would require. That's oftentimes difficult to make him understand and difficult to make him convince that accounting is a good thing. So that's why a general notion of what would someone who is doing it consider as something new or changed, or what would these people consider as, hey, come on, it's the same thing, it's got a different name now, but my purpose is the same, the risks are the same, kind of that. So to always consider that, because it is really the past, as I said, my personal experience is a lot of times that you looked into it and you said, well, that is rather a form of a substance matter we have here. And if that could be, this form of a substance notion could be reduced, and working on it, I think that would be helpful.
I think that I'm hoping IFRS 9 hedge accounting is slightly better on that front, but still it's very, I know hedge accounting is very technical and geeky, but even in IFRS 9, I think one of the things we will be trying to do, particularly when we look at things like the modifications and how you should account for the fact that your liable reference has changed to something else in the contract, is whether there's some boundaries we can come up with where you wouldn't have to do so much sort of long-haul 10% test type things if particular parameters are met, to try and be more practical. But what we're going to have to try and work out is if we can identify circumstances where there's truly been an economic change as part of the renegotiations versus really just a very technical exchange of one rate for the other. And I think that's the sort of thing we will be looking at. So we are going to, I think, try and be as practical as we can be within those sorts of boundaries.
Yeah. And the second one on the impact on other standards, when thinking that through, don't forget, a lot of preparers are very close to these other standards, not too close to this one, depending on industry. So it may take some effort to make them understand that there might be an issue that they don't see because they think IBOR are not really affected by it. So if there is something you see, well, that affects people through the other standards. I think you've got to highlight it differently than just under the umbrella of IBOR reform, which some preparers might not be overly focused on.
Okay. Any other comments? Okay. And thank you for the IBOR team. And as Aida is not here, then let's make a 5-minute break, comfort break, and we are back at 11:05.